Coming to you from deep in the heart of Texas, this is Punk Brats, a podcast focused on the lives and experiences of our military brats. We didn't serve, we got served. Now here are your Punk Brats, Rose and Lisa.
Hey, it's Rose.
Hi, you guys. It's Lisa. We're the Punk Brats. Hey, Rose.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's, you know what? It's just, I cannot believe we're almost halfway through 2025. It's ridiculous and freaking me out.
Yeah, I know it because I was just thinking, feels like yesterday that I was on one of our episodes where I'm like, oh, we just have a few more days of school left. And here I am saying it again. Thursday's our last day.
Oh, yeah. This is the month that school gets out.
Yep.
I feel like singing that Alice Cooper song, School's Out.
School's out forever. Yeah, but not really.
So what's happening this month? What's going on, Anya?
So I wanted to start off by answering Ellie's question from last month's podcast.
Hi, Ellie.
Ellie from Texas said that her favorite part about being a military kid is traveling with her mom. Well, Ellie, guess what? That is one of my favorite parts about being a military kid as well. And I remember traveling with our parents and going to all these different really cool places. And we mostly traveled with our mom too, while our dad stayed back and kind of held down the fort. And we used to travel Space Available, which made traveling an adventure. And I know we've talked about Space Available traveling before. And I always liked getting bumped. But now as a mom myself, I realize that getting bumped was probably a nightmare for our mother, you know, like for mom.
Make sure she's feeding us and getting us cleaned and
exactly comfortable. All of that stuff. And, you know, having a comfortable place to sleep because, you know, you couldn't really leave the airport in case there was a flight that came up. But I was thinking about one of my favorite stories is when we were in Korea. We took a Space Available flight to Korea from Japan, and we were going from store to store, and Lisa and I were holding up earrings to put onto our ear to see if we liked it. Well, the shopkeeper there, or the owner, whoever the person working there, right?
Yeah,
did not know that Lisa and I understood Korean. We spoke and understood Korean. This is really cool. So she basically was saying in Korean, "Oh, I can't believe these American kids always touching everything." You know, just like rolling her eyes and giving us the side eye. Yeah. And then, of course, what's the first thing we do? We go back and we tell mom.
Yeah, hey, guess what?
We're like, this Korean lady is talking bad about us. And the first thing mom does is march down there. And wow, mom had her back.
Yes, she did. Yeah, it was rude. And so just, hey, take this as a note out there. You never know who can speak what language, so just be careful. And now they have all that technology, right, where you can record someone and it translates what they're saying to you. So what else is happening?
I don't know. I just thought that maybe I didn't know if you had any stories that particularly about traveling.
Well, because I was always with you. You hit it on the dot, you know. But the one thing I do want to tell Ellie is that one advantage that I love about being a military brat living overseas is one thing, whether it was in Japan or Europe, Germany, we always had access to trams and trains. And that was our freedom, our access to freedom. And so for a military brat, I think we kind of grew up faster in the sense of having to be more responsible because we were going off of a base, going into another culture. We had more rules to follow. It made us more responsible than I think I would have been if I were raised stateside.
Oh yeah, me too. Yeah. I definitely agree.
So great question, Ellie. Great question.
Yeah, that is a great question. And it's kind of interesting that we had that question because we were recently in DC and Lisa and I were on the trams or the trains.
The trains.
I guess it's like a train like a subway, right?
Yeah.
And as I was traveling, and I don't think I mentioned this to you, Lisa, but as we were traveling on the train, like I just had all these core memories unlocked, like just thinking, wow, the last time I was on a train with my sister like this, we were probably on our way down to the Altstadt to party.
Yeah, in Germany. Hell yeah. That's awesome. We had such fun, you guys. If you guys know Rose and Lisa, we always made wherever we lived fun for us.
Yeah.
Responsibly.
We adapted. Well, that's what military brats do. We adapt, you know, where we have to, and just made it the best that we could.
We just were really lucky to have the parents that we had, you know, again, and, you know, again, we, as we spoke in our last interview, it's not always, you know, sometimes brats have challenges with parents who may have PTSD or some other kind of military challenge. But this is where Rose and I can honestly say that we are blessed, truly blessed. So,
gosh, yeah. And, you know, that's a good segue into our Did You Know this month. This month, since 2021, the National Military Family Association, which is a nonprofit dedicated to serving military families, they have surveyed military teens and their experiences, and they just released the 2024 results, which I found very interesting. And just real quickly, just to touch on some of their some of the results from the survey. Which is like insights into military teen lives. It revealed that with the mental health struggles, only 8% report high mental well-being, while 35% experience low mental well-being. Self-harm concerns, approximately 45% have engaged in self-harm at least once, with one-third repeating the behavior in the past 6 months. Food insecurity, over half, 54% report experiencing low or very low food security in the past month. Employment pressures, nearly 1 in 5 teens work to support the family's finances. Yeah. And this one's really interesting. Military service aspirations, more than half, 51% plan to join the military, which, you know, reflects a really strong sense of duty. If anybody out there wants to learn more about this survey, there's a bunch. It was really thorough and very interesting. You can visit www.militaryfamily.org.
Oh, that's really, and you know, speaking of militaryfamily.org, also May 13th to be exact, is also Children of Fallen Patriots Day. And, you know, we just spoke to the Haas sisters, and she actually works for a nonprofit organization called Fallen Patriots that, if you need to learn more, listen to this past episode right before this one. And, so what, there's more happening in May. What else is happening?
We have Military Spouse Appreciation Day.
Oh,
which we'd go for our
Thank
mother.
Thank you to all the spouses.
Yes.
Thank you to our mom. Mm-hmm.
One thing mom always says, that she didn't just marry dad, she also married the army.
Oh, yeah. She married both, right? All right. Well, speaking of moms, what else is happening? You didn't mention Mother's Day.
Oh, that's right. Mother's Day. Duh.
And speaking of mothers, we have a surprise.
Yay. Hi, Emma.
어머니, 안녕하세요.
안녕하세요.
안녕하세요, 엄마.
We got our mom on this episode, the special May episode. In honor of all the mothers out there, we brought on ours.
Uh-huh. 어머니. You're our special guest this month.
Yes.
Thank you.
So, mom, tell us from the beginning, really, you know, like, how you met dad and how, like, what it meant to you to marry dad and to become an American.
Friend introduced by my best friend. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, well, first time I was a little scared to come on stage, America. But later on, I get used to that.
Yeah.
So I'm very proud to marry the military. Yeah. So,
well, yeah. Well, mom, you also did your time. I mean, being married to somebody in the military, dad had to leave many times and you had to do everything on your own.
That's
and
right.
You barely spoke English. You'd only lived in America for a few months and then boom, dad's gone.
Right.
It's challenges.
Mm-hmm. Challenges. Yeah. But I work it out. Okay. I'm smart enough.
Yes,
I'm
you are.
Military wife, you know?
Yeah. And it's in our blood.
I have to.
Yeah,
I had to support you guys, so
yeah. But when you moved to Texas, it was too hot for you, so you told dad, let's go back to Korea, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Every time he makes me upset, I want to go back to Korea. He's sorry.
That's funny. So when you first came to Texas, and this would have been in the early 70s, right? In the early 70s.
Seventy.
Were there other Korean people or It's the culture so different. How was that for you? Were you able to make any friends with other Korean people, or what? And also, like, the foods that you ate, were you able to get your foods?
No, we don't have any Asian store, no Korean store. Very small Japanese store. That's all we have. So I miss very much the Korean food that time. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And what about meeting other Korean people? Did you make any friends?
Yeah, I made a friend, and we had that time we live in Killeen, Texas. Okay. And we have Austin to Killeen, Copper School, Hard Guys, the whole thing, but there was about 500 people.
Wow.
That's it. Wow.
That's it? Mm-hmm. Not now.
Now probably about 50,000.
Thousands. As a matter of fact, whenever I go visit Imo and Colleen, like our family member Imo.
30,000 Korean now.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's so many Korean restaurants to choose from that it mm-hmm. frustrates me because I want to eat at all of them, but you can only pick one.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And Mom, before we brought you on to the show, I was just talking to Lisa about the story about the earring. Do you remember that? When we were traveling to Korea, we were teenagers, and I put the earring up, and then you came in there and you started yelling at the girl, telling her, hey, you better be careful. You don't know, you know, who can speak Korean and who can't speak Korean. Mm-hmm. And thank you for raising us also to speak the language and understand the language.
Sure,
and I remember being young and not wanting to speak it, but we grew up where Mom spoke to us in Korean and we answered in English.
What are you talking about? Mom sent us to Korean school on Saturdays.
Oh, I know.
Right. Gosh. Yeah, I did.
We had school Monday through Friday. We had Korean school on Saturday and then Sunday school on Sunday.
Right.
Exactly. Right. And I thought that was over when we had moved to Japan, but no, she found a Korean school in Japan. And then I thought, oh my gosh, for sure, when we moved to Germany, at least the Saturday school will go, right? The Saturday Korean school. But no, she found a Saturday Korean school in German.
In Germany.
It's a nightmare.
Oh
but
my
thank
gosh.
You. I thank appreciate you. It now, you know, looking back.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just love that Mom teaches us both cultures, that we didn't just grow up boring, you know, like we get to recognize and appreciate a whole nother country that we are 50% of. Mm-hmm. And so I'm a little biased, but yeah, I'm very proud to be Korean. Mm-hmm. We got some really good food.
Well, we're really fortunate that our parents really instilled, you know, both, like Dad with American pride and Mom with Korean pride.
Oh my gosh.
We get both of them for us. Both we get it from both.
Yeah. Best of both worlds. Yes.
I
feel bad. I raised you too strict. You know? You guys are who you are today.
Yes, true, Mom.
Daddy was a very, very strict.
So yes, if you look up the definition of tiger mom in the dictionary, tiger mom, definitely my mother.
Yeah. You know what, Mom? So on my left shoulder, I have you. On my right shoulder, I had Dad.
That's right.
On top of my head, I had God.
Yeah.
Between those three, I was not going to get in trouble. Yeah. I was too scared.
You mean you weren't going to get caught?
I was
going to
get caught.
Yeah. We always talk about the Daddy and I, we pretty lucky you guys had never gave me trouble. You was a high school.
Yeah.
Rose,
we loved you, Mom.
Give me trouble. You never give me trouble. I've never had to tell you guys to go study. So you did it your own. So
well, you worked hard, Mom.
I appreciate it.
Rose and I, ever since we were little, we woke up, you were gone working. And then when it's almost dark, you come home. And then when we moved to Japan, it was the same thing. And then we moved to Germany. You got the job at the commissary as the manager, you know, produce manager. Same thing. You worked from 6 a.m. till 7 p.m. And so thank you for everything you've ever done for us.
Michelle.
Thank
you.
Yes.
Thank you.
You're the best. Happy Mother's Day.
Well, thank you.
Yes. Happy
Omanyana. I'm lucky. Lucky to have you both.
Patty. Patty's listening to this going, hello, what about me? I mean, you're lucky to have all three.
Yeah, she's my baby. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Patty. It's so funny because Rose and I talk, Mom, about Punk Brats. And then we always have to remember, like, oh, Patty, but she's 7 years and 9 years younger than me and Rose. Yeah. And so when we had her, we had Patty on here, and she was sharing like how she's only half of a military brat, you know?
Yeah.
Because she came over and got to go to American high school.
Right.
We didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, so Mom, is there anything you want to tell anybody out there? Any advice for the young women who are married now and starting their lives with their husbands or wives who are in the military? Like, any advice for the spouses?
Well, I'm pretty sure a lot of young people married to military people when they went overseas and stuff like that, when they miss a home and they're tired for military, but be proud as a military wife. And I really enjoyed my 26 years and your father's military. Yeah. I'm still talk about it. I'm very proud. So stay there, support the husband.
Okay.
And wife.
Well, hold on, you guys.
Yeah.
I have a surprise for you. Somebody want to say hello?
Oh, wow.
Hi.
Oh, wow.
Hi, Patty.
This is a surprise for me, too.
Patty.
I wanted to surprise Rose and my mom and our mom with Patty. Patty, we're about to close out, so we figured the last minute that we have recording, we wanted to let you know that we were just telling Mom how wonderful she is as a military wife and a military mom and all that. But you know what Mom said? We were talking and Mom's like, well, I'm so proud of you both. I'm so glad I had you two. And then we're like, what about Patty?
Patty, that's like the story of your life, right? Always. It's like, what about me?
Well, she's such a far away, so I only see you two. So, you know.
Yeah. Patty's still in California.
I love the same three daughter. I'm very lucky.
Well, P, close it out. What was it like for you to have Mom as a military mom growing up when you were younger?
It was amazing. I thought it was good. I feel like we had Dad who was like actually in the military. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like super strict and, you know, and then I feel like we had Mom who was like a mom. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yes. A mom.
So mom, I felt like we kind of had like the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
That's what Lisa said. That's exactly what I said. All right. Well, Mom, thank you so much for being on our show.
Sure.
Patty, thanks for the last minute surprise.
I love you guys.
Love you guys too. We'll see you guys later.
Okay.
See y'all later. Bye.
안녕히 가세요. Thank you for you inviting me.
Of course, Mom. Always.
아야, 엄마, 사랑해요.
사랑해요.
사랑해요 too.
And if you guys don't know what all that means, 사랑해요 in Korean means I love you. And 어머니 means mother. And if you hear me refer to Rose sometimes as Anyi, Anyi means big sister.
Older sister.
Mm-hmm. Older sister.
Mm-hmm. Older sister.
I'm not saying onion, like my mother-in-law used to think I said. That was so funny when she first said that to me. She goes, are you calling your sister an onion? I go, no, I call her Anyi. Oh my gosh, Rose. So was that a good surprise?
It was a good surprise. I wasn't expecting to hear from Patty. So, yeah.
I think she was driving, so I don't know if her connection was very good. But anyway, it just felt so good to have like my two sisters and my mom to talk with. So, Mom's so cute. She did great. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. I thought I almost cried. I got a little emotional in the very beginning. You know, I have relationship goals, and Mom and Dad are my goals.
Oh yeah, I totally get that. And it comes to marriage goals for sure.
Yeah.
Our parents are definitely a good model.
But you know what? Enough about us. We got to bring our guest out. Oh my goodness. We have Matt Schletter, the publisher of the Stars and Stripes newspaper, Rose, the number one honcho. We have him to talk with.
Oh, I know. So cool. So just a quick little backstory. Lisa and I were in DC with our husbands. The second week of April?
Mm-hmm.
And we got a personal tour and a history of the Stars and Stripes, the office in DC from our friend Corey Henderson. And as he was introducing us to everybody, Max came in and we said, hey, Max. And then Max was introducing himself and introduced himself as also a military brat. And I remember just thinking, oh, my gosh, he needs to be on the show. That is our next
guest. You said it to his face.
Yes. I was
said,
like,
you're going to be on our show.
Coming on our show. I was so excited because I just had so many questions.
And he does such wonderful things that we got to learn about him before we interviewed him. And so I'm just really looking forward to bringing him out. So are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. Come on out, Max. Hi, Max. I'm Lisa. Welcome to the Punk Brats.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Rose.
See you.
So today we have Max from the Stars and Stripes, the publisher. This is really exciting for me and Rose because we just got back from Washington, D.C., thanks to you guys, and had the best, most incredible tour of the Stars and Stripes newspaper. Been reading it since we were little, and to actually like be in the headquarters and to see how it's done was extremely cool and definitely a bucket list, something I could knock off my bucket list as an Army brat. So
me very too. Cool. And when we briefly were introduced to Max and met him, met you, and you said that you were a brat, the first thing in my head was, oh my gosh, we have to immediately interview you.
You said it right there on the spot. You're yeah. Like, we have to interview you.
Yep, I did. I was just so intrigued. So I'd like to start off how we start off interviewing all our guests is asking you basically to introduce yourself, starting from where you were born through, take us through high school, a little beyond that if you want to, and let our listeners get to know you.
Great. Well, my name's Max Lutterer. I was born on Plattsburgh Air Force Base in New York. My father was in the Air Force. I'm a junior, so he was senior. He retired a few years later as an E6 after I was born. And so we didn't move around quite as much at that point, but we did move to North of Niagara Falls. That was his last assignment at the Niagara Falls Air Force Base, which is now a reserve unit. So I grew up in Lockport, New York, just north of Niagara Falls, where north of Buffalo, where it likes to snow and be cold. So some of my experience from my younger years were sledding and ice skating and dealing with blizzards, which was really cool. I like it. I like to work. I like the snow, starting from those particular routes. Because my father got out of the service, I didn't move around as much. So I stayed in the same high school, Lockport Senior High School, for my career. But some of the themes that my father had in the service stuck with myself and my three siblings, my three brothers, in that it was a very strong theme of service in our family. My father, when he got out of the service, went into education, first as a teacher at high schools, and he coached the unit team at Plattsburgh Air Force Base for baseball when he was still on active duty, and then he stayed with that. And then eventually went into administration. He was the athletic director as I was growing up. And then later on, the New York State Physical High School Association director for the entire state. My mom was the same. She became a teacher and followed around. My parents met when my father was doing his graduate degree at Hofstra after he finished his college time. So that was a strong theme in our family was service. The other strong theme that we had was a leadership thing. It was, okay, when you're with a group, step up, be accounted for, raise your hand, volunteer, and see what you can do to make things better. And those were really themes that came from my father from his service, and then he carried to us as we went along. That infused us in school. We all played sports. Three of us were captains of our cross country and track teams. I wasn't captain of the hockey team, the ice hockey team, because we always got crushed by the Canadians across the border. So we survived the games. So we weren't very prepared. We went over to St. Catharines and they would beat us like 9-1. And like, okay, we'll just go back home and play our little club hockey in the United States. So that didn't go anywhere for me, but I got a lot of experience in that process. And my father was around a lot as athletic director around our sports. So those themes kept going for us as far as leadership and being involved. When I went away to school for university, I went to Marshall University. Because of my father's service that drove me, and I had a 4-year Army ROTC scholarship and began my Army career at that point. I was commissioned in 82. I went to Airborne School in 81 and began my journey in the military, wow. Continuing my service.
Thank you for your service.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Wow. Wow.
Wow, that is a lot. That's awesome. I happen to also be a high school teacher. So that's really cool to hear that, that you know, you come from a family of educators.
Yeah. And I love how you said you included how your dad would say volunteer and, you know, be engaged in that sense. I just love that. Your dad sounds really cool.
You know, that's one of the things I think is most enriching about military service, not just people in uniform, but the spouses and the kids. They stand up and they join. They join clubs. Mm-hmm. They do for events, whether it's the spouses club or whether it's helping to teach kids soccer as they move around or whatever it might be that floats somebody's particular interest. People stand up and volunteer. The Red Cross Associations on bases and the American, the ACS services, they're all about volunteer. And you come into a community, you've uprooted yourself, your spouse goes off to work, you know, they got their uniform on, they know what they're going to do. And you're like, okay, what do I do? People don't just sit at home in the military community. They join and then they volunteer. And I think that's how we as kids grow up learning that's what you do. That's how you integrate into a new community.
Absolutely. When we were growing up in Germany, our parents always had us engaged and stuff. We actually in Germany won Family Volunteer of the Year.
That's cool. That is very cool.
Thank you. I saw my award.
Me too. Somewhere. I know I still have it. So when you're in the military, what did you do in the military? Did you work for like the, something to do with the newspaper or
no? So I went to airborne school when I was in ROTC, but then I decided that I wanted to do my service with my head instead of my brawn, and so I took an educational delay and went to law school, and then came back on active duty as an Army Judge Advocate General. So I was a jumping jag, had a couple of jumping assignments, but most of my assignments were either with armored units or artillery units at different places. Wow. And then I stayed with that to Desert Storm, Desert Shield, and I deployed with an Army unit there. And I was forward deployed with the Tactical Operating Center with a brigade commander and then division ADCS, the ADCM, the Assistant Division Commander for Maneuver. So it was a little different path as a lawyer because when you're in combat, you're not worried about traffic tickets and family events. And stuff. You're worried about how do you treat displaced civilians or how do you treat prisoners of war or is it a proper lawful target as you're going through? And those, it's kind of a different law that you're practicing at that point. But then back in garrison, I spent a lot of time doing criminal law, both as a defense counsel and as a prosecutor. That's where a lot of my service time was.
Wow. Wow. That sounds amazing.
Did you always know what you wanted to do when you were like younger? Did you have a plan?
I had no clue. Oh. It just kind of went as I went. So, you know, when I was getting out of high school, I just knew that I wanted to go away. My parents had moved around and they saw the world. And I thought, you know, I don't want to just stay here. I just want to go somewhere else. And Marshall offered me an opportunity to run cross country for them and then an ROTC scholarship. And I thought, oh, this is a pretty interesting school. That's the university had the big plane crash in 1970. They have the movie about it. We Are Marshall.
I remember that.
I went away and my parents didn't have a lot of money. They were school teachers, as I said. So their idea of taking me to my freshman class was to drive me to the Greyhound bus stop. You know, they put me on the Greyhound bus stop. I rode it for 10 hours. I got at the town. I hauled my suitcase to the campus and I began my educational experience. So that's kind
of wow.
Yeah. Don't regret any of it. It was all great.
So that's really cool. I actually have kind of an interesting question. So without naming names or divulging identities, are there any Army JAG cases or experiences that you can share with us?
So I,
something interesting, juicy.
Some of them are a little less pleasant than others. So I did a couple murder trials, one in Korea that was particularly bad, where One of the things that happened in Korea back in the 80s was that service members would go over there and they would fall in love with local Korean women who were in the gentlemen's club, to say it nicely.
Okay.
And they would get married, but sometimes those women didn't realize what American society was all about. Mm. The phrase we used to say is they wanted to marry to go back to the big PXE in the United States. Then they would go back to Korea. And in this one particular case, this woman decided when her husband went to the field all the time that she would go back into business. And she went into business with other service members in his unit. And he caught her doing it. And he was very angry about that. And he murdered her in a very abusive, nasty way. Ugh. So that wasn't a great trial, but he got the sentence he deserved. I had also a baby murder case over there, which was not very pleasant, where the gentleman took his baby by the ankles and cracked his skull in four places, slamming it against the cement wall. So were not good things. But on the other spectrum of that, we did what are called Chapter 15 overweight boards. So people who were having difficulties with their weight back in those days, if you didn't meet your weight standards for 6 months, they processed you out for elimination. And I was a defense counsel then, and I found those cases really enriching, because if I had someone that really wanted to make a difference in life, they would go out and they join Weight Watchers and do other physical fitness clubs. And you could come into the hearing and show what they're doing to save their career, and then bring the other people that have experienced in the career to show what a good soldier they are. In many cases, those people were retained and given time to sort out their weight and then go on to really productive careers. So that's kind of the opposite spectrum of really bad things to really helping people progress forward.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm a true crime junkie. Like,
I was going to say Lisa for sure.
And just that little bit was like a true crime moment on Punk Brats. Wow. Thank you for doing that, because, I mean, there has to be defense and prosecute. You know, there has to be a defense attorney. There has to be prosecutors, regardless of what side. I admire attorneys who can put themselves in a position to have to even be in a room to hear those kinds of stories and to have to just deal with the consequences of how the case, you know, ends, whether they're guilty or not, you know, just thank
the
you.
United States military is a microcosm of our own society. So we have all the same kind of bad things and good things going on, and just not in the same quantity, but it does happen. But I believe that if the defense counsel does their job, the prosecutor does their job, the police do their job, and the judges do their job, you generally end up with the right result.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so how do you go from doing that to becoming the publisher of the Stars and Stripes?
Right?
When I was promoted to major in the Army, I decided when you become major in the JAG Corps, you do less and less law and you do more administration. I became the officer in charge of a legal branch. And I decided that isn't what I wanted to do. I wanted to stay in a courtroom. I wanted to continue those things. So I left the service and I was hired by Stars and Stripes to be their general counsel. After 4 years of their general counsel in Europe, where I was assigned, I learned all their secrets and they had to make me part of management. And I became the general manager of the Europe office at that point.
Nice.
Worked my way.
Wow, what a great story. That's awesome. That is awesome.
And your hard work. I mean, you've definitely worked hard. I mean, just I forgot to tell you that when I was in high school, I think I was in 10th grade for my my summer hire job. I worked in JAG for the summer.
Very cool.
Shout out to Mr. Vernati. Rest in peace. And the Vernati sisters out there, if you're listening. I worked their dad. He was my boss.
Yeah. I'm an Army National Guard veteran, Texas Army National Guard veteran, and I worked in JAG, and it was probably one of my favorite experiences of my life. And I loved working with the JAG officers. Probably some of the funnest people I've ever met.
Yeah, it was a very interesting office to work in as a high schooler, to hear some of the stuff, you know. And then you have to be, you know, sworn to secrecy not to talk about some of the things you do here, because we were on a very small base and there were people who still got in trouble, and you know, and you just had to keep that to yourself. And I knew to keep my mouth shut because, again, it was my friend's father, and I just would not want to put myself in a position of getting into trouble or anything. But I took my job very seriously. That, not that I didn't at the other summer hire jobs, but that one I took very seriously.
So one of the things I found interesting in the JAG Corps is you have kind of two different officers. You have those officers who come through ROTC or from one of the academies, and you know they're becoming professional soldiers. But in the JAG Corps, much like in the medical corps, you'll have what they call direct commissionees, people coming right out of school. And they don't know the left foot from the right foot formation. You got to be kidding me, you know, about face. They try not to fall down. And the whole experience for those initial JAG officers is they get 2 weeks of training on how to be an officer. And then the rest of the time is learning military law. And so they struggle. So they get out of an assignment and you go, okay, PT's at 0430 in the morning. And they're like, what's PT? What? Oh, wow. 0430. You know, it's really dark outside.
Yeah. Oh, PT at 4:30 does not sound fun.
No.
Not
and
at all.
In formation and somebody yells out, okay, road guard. And they're in the assignment for road guard. And it's like, what's road guard? It's really, really amusing to kind of watch them grow up as officers. It's fun.
So going back to your brathood, I guess I'm just going to rewind a little bit. So you really didn't move around a lot. You're a stateside brat because our very first episode was highlighting, and this episode, this podcast kind of highlights whether you're a stateside brat, an overseas brat, or both. So you're a stateside brat. So
right, yeah. I was, but my kids were both born in Germany.
Okay,
and I was still doing DoD service. And they moved around a bunch. My oldest went to 3 different high schools in his last 4 years. So he got that real experience.
He gets it.
Yeah, because I moved around more than and stayed in the entire time they were growing up.
Wow, that sounds like our childhood. That kind of mirrors our childhood, the way that
back and forth, right? Too, for us. Mm-hmm. It was States, Korea, back to the States, then Japan, then Germany, back to States.
Yeah.
You know, so What's enriching in that is we learn at a young age that people do different things, but that's okay. It's okay to look at the world differently. It's okay to eat mm-hmm. different food. It's okay to play different sports. Everybody doesn't have to do the same thing. And you learn also that because you're leaving one community doesn't mean like, oh my God, I'll never see my friends again. This is devastating. You know that you're going to go to a community with a whole new group of friends to be experienced and grow with. And I think my kids really got that experience. They decided to go away to college. It was no drama at all. Oh, I can't go far. No, they were like, you know, as far as I can get, I'm ready to go. And that's a learned experience as you grow through those things. And I talk to people I grew up with, they've never left my hometown. That, you know, the biggest trip they made is like 50 miles to Rochester. And, you know, I've been to Korea and Japan and in the Middle East, and it's just completely different experience in life.
So, I mean, Rose usually asks this question, but I mean, so when people do ask you where you're from, how do you answer that question? I mean, like, what do you tell people?
So I'll answer my perspective and I'll answer my kids' perspective because it's different. So I still kind of think where I went to high school. And that's okay. I talk about where I'm from. Even though since then, all I've done is move. Since I was 18, I've just moved. At one point in time, I moved 10 times in 15 years. So, but I still kind of think of high school. Where my kids, though, I ask them where they're from, and their answer is completely different. Where they're from is where they're at that moment.
Oh, okay.
They don't really associate with any particular location. I don't think when they were growing up that we spent any more than 3 years in one particular location. So they just they just don't have that same connection. That doesn't mean, though, that they haven't picked up fondness for certain places. And they'll talk about, oh, what's the best place where you can ride your bike? Well, that's Germany because you have all the Fußgänger zones and you have the trails and stuff. Well, where did you like the food the best? My one kid, he really likes Japanese food. And he's like, oh, I really liked what we had when we were at Hardy Barracks in Tokyo. So, you know, they pick up particular things that they like in different places. And I like what they say as far as their theme. And that is, they like something about everywhere. And so
I like that.
The place, everything is a good place.
I love that. Wow.
Yeah, I feel the same way, although I still get a lot, I get a lot of anxiety when people ask me where I'm from. I don't know why, it just triggers something in me. And it's been years since I've moved, you know, but I just get mm-hmm. like, oh, I don't really know, like, oh, do I say where I was born? Do I say where I lived the longest? Do I say, you know, where I graduated high school? Because I went to two different high schools for almost like equal amount of time. So 9th and 10th grade in one high school and 11th and 12th grade in another school. So
I always start off by saying where I was born. I just always say, well, I was born at Fort Hood and from there. And that's always how I answer that same question. And yeah, Fort Hood.
So my one son said the best thing about going to multiple high schools is you've got a whole different pool of people to date in each school.
That's funny. One of the hardest things for me was, when I lived in Japan, our school colors were black and white, and our biggest rival school, they were red and white. So when I moved to Germany, we were red and white, and that really killed me. It's like, oh my gosh.
And the other challenge we had as military brats is we were on a military base where we had everything, football, cheerleading. It was kind of like living on the States, you know, because the military base at Camp Zalma, we had it all. And then we moved to Germany where we were put, it wasn't a base. And the high school, we were bused an hour and a half to an international school in Dusseldorf. Yeah. There were no sports. We didn't even have a music program. We didn't even have a lunch program. And that was challenging on top of being a military brat of having to move. Now nobody gives you therapy back then. You know, they don't tell you, well, this is it. There's no, you have to find your own. Yeah. It was just kind of a challenge at first when we changed from Japan to Germany. But then we, of course, acclimated really quick.
Adapted. I mean, we're brats. We adapt, we can...
We adapt very quickly as brats.
Pretty much conform to, you know, whatever society we move to with any situation. And I think that that's actually helped me as an adult. I know for some people, it hindered them, but... I'm really actually grateful for having all those experiences.
Yeah.
Trying something new and different.
Go to the Bahrain High School, the dot school there. There's no other schools around. And so when they do their sports, they fly to Europe and they spend like a month.
And
do all their games in 1 month. You know, all their football games, all their basketball games, everything happens in 1 month because then they go back to school. Because if you have to keep going over and over and over again, it's too disruptive, too expensive. Yeah. So you can get even more isolated than ending up at the international school.
Wow. Can I ask you a question? I want to talk a little bit more about the Stars and Stripes because we're going to come up to, quickly, real soon. What's your typical day? What's a typical day in your role as a publisher at the Stars and Stripes?
So the Stars and Stripes is kind of two parts. You have the news part, and then we have what we call the information part. The news is that hard journalism. What is the important story in the community today? Is it suicide prevention that we're dealing with, or is it a relief of a commander of a Navy ship? So some of that day is spent that, but that really is me just helping the team choose what's the priority. There is always more than we can cover, and we have to decide what's the priority, what are we going to put our assets against. And it's not always necessarily the biggest story, because sometimes the Associated Press or the Washington Post will cover it, and we'll pick it up from them. It's the story we think that's most needed to be told. So, for example, a couple of years ago, the decision by the military to no longer allow dependents to get medical care in the U.S. government facilities and having to go on the economy, we thought was the most important story for a period of time. And we were all over that. And we rearranged our assets. We sent reporters TDY. We set up. So some of that is spent on that. The other half of what we do is what we call the information part. That's the readiness, the lifestyle part. So it's transition guides, welcome to guides to help people PCS into a community. It's fitness guides, health guides, things like that. That's more on the business side, because we spend a lot of time finding advertising dollars and other dollars to help pay for that production and to pay for that coverage. So I spend a good bit of my time on return on investment and the profit loss.
Sure, sure.
And how do we manage the number of pages, or is it going to be all digital? So there's a lot of business aspects on that part of the operation. So you're bouncing between those two things almost every day.
Wow. I subscribe to the Stars and Stripes online.
Excellent. It's a good deal. Not that expensive.
I have a quick question. So I grew up on the Stars and Stripes. I loved it. I remember we would fight over who would get to read the comics first. But how are you keeping like the Stars and Stripes relevant for like the Gen Z troops now? Because, you know, they mostly, you know, scroll TikTok and on social media. How has that changed the Stars and Stripes?
So one part of it is, when you think about it, there are no other news organizations, TikTok or anything, is going to give them credible information about what they need to know about their life. How do they get promoted? Where do they go to classes? How do I get childcare? When do I move to a community? Can I take my weapon? Can I take my dog? All those kind of things. We lean heavily into that. So it's a story. It's information they can't readily get anywhere else. But of course, delivery is really important. So we do all the traditional messages. We have a newspaper. We have a primary website. We have 5 community websites. We have mobile apps, both phone, tablet, those devices. We have 7 different e-newsletters that are topically designed. We do 300 other plus publications that are based on niche content and geographic content that we do in print and digitally for people so they can get it on their phone or their tablet or they can pick up the hard copy. So it's the delivery is as important as anything else.
Absolutely.
And of course, we do the social media. We do Instagram. We do Reels. Mm-hmm. We do Facebook, all those things. But it all comes down to, at the end, what is the information that the military community needs that they cannot get anywhere else, told with the discipline of being fair, accurate, and impartial, not with an opinion, not left, not right, just straight down the middle, so the people in the community can decide what is of value to them themselves.
Mm. So one more question. Is there a dream story or a project that you haven't tackled yet that you want to?
So we would like to look in a little deeper into the healthcare issue for, I'll call it, for those people who have lost a loved one during their time, whether it's a military member that was killed in combat or whether it's a military member that lost a spouse in a violent car accident or whatever it is. How does that impact them in life? And what are the resources for them to deal with that traumatic experience? We're trying to lean into that. We actually, I was at a conference today with the Traumatic Assistance Program for Survivors, and we're talking to them and other organizations coming together. How can we produce content and get that message out? What's available, how to deal with it, how to deal with your grief, how to deal with your PTSD.
Yeah.
We're starting to lean in that. It's a big story, but I think it's really needed. Too often, I'll use a spouse, for example, a spouse and kids. Their military member passes away from whatever reason. They're now disconnected from the community that they know, the only community you know, and then they're plopped back in the civilian society, and they don't have a resource. They don't have VA benefits. They don't have another community that's military around them. They've gone back to wherever they started. That's a really difficult transition. And I think we as a military community owe them help and assistance. And we want to help in telling that story.
I think that's fantastic. I don't want to take too much time on it, but that's my background is I worked in hospice for many, many, many years and did bereavement counseling and development. And which we started, you know, where our parent company is Hats Off for Veterans, and we focus a lot on mental health, and it's definitely needed. But I also have another idea for you, Mr. Max, if you ever want a story on that you want to do on like military families called the Punk Rats, just let us know. If you ever want to highlight.
Lisa, the shameless plug.
The shameless plug. But you guys, guess what it's time for? It's time for the lightning round.
Excellent.
All right. This
This is my favorite part of our interview. And Max, I'm just going to ask you a series of random questions and just tell me the first thing that comes to your head. This is just a way for our listeners. Listen to me, I'm saying readers now. For our listeners to get to know you a little bit better, more on a personal level.
And feel free to pass if you need to, but we're going to come back to it.
Okay, are you ready?
Yes.
What is the weirdest food you have ever eaten?
Oh, a dried octopus off the sidewalk in Seoul.
Okay.
Okay. Ooh. We're going to come back to that one. Oh. So you've just won $100 million. What's your reckless very first purchase?
Oh, I want a fancy electronic car, like a Jaguar or something along those lines.
Okay. As a kid, were you a rule follower or rule bender?
Oh, definitely a bender.
Okay. you get one superpower. What is it?
To be able to read people's emotions.
Okay. Which is more intense, a military courtroom or a newsroom?
Oh, a newsroom.
Wow.
Courtrooms are so much more decorum.
Okay. Pineapple on pizza, yes or no?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Hey. Okay. Favorite courtroom or legal-centered movie?
Say that one more time, please.
Your favorite courtroom or legal-centered movie? You know, like A Few Good Men, My Cousin Vinny.
Yes, the Tom Cruise, yes.
Okay.
So, aliens land. What's the first thing you say to them?
Rose.
He coming from Z?
We're coming Z?
Yes. Where do you come from?
Oh, him coming Z.
So, would you rather read the Stars and Stripes forever in print or forever in digital?
Oh, digital. Okay. As I get older, I can spin me out to look at the font. Oh, okay.
Don't need to pull out the magnifying glass. And our final question, if Stars and Stripes had a mascot, what would it be?
Oh, a lion.
Oh, cool. That's my favorite. I'm a Leo. Wow. That was
very
awesome.
Cool.
Hey, that was good. You survived the lightning round. Yay.
Thank you.
Those are great answers.
Especially first of all, octopus on a sidewalk in Korea. Okay.
Yes, you can't leave us hanging with that.
What?
There's got to be a backstory.
I was 29, and outside of Yongsan Base in Seoul was a place called Itaewon. Itaewon today is a real high-end stores and everything, but in those days, it was like villas and half-paved and stuff like that. And the vendors would dry seafood and lay it on the sidewalk. And now today, when I think about it, there's cars going by, there's people going by, all that stuff's got dirt and stuff on it. But I'm like, oh man, this is like beef jerky. I'm just going to peel it up and eat it. It was really salty and not very tasty, and it was really chewy. But hey, I got it down.
Well, I admire people who have a palate that are willing to try stuff, because ask Rose. I'm the pickiest eater, and we are half Korean, and our mother is a chef, and I don't eat any type of seafood at all whatsoever. I'm a meat potatoes kind of a girl, but Rose loves that whole, and if I do sushi, it's vegetable sushi, like,
California.
Do I like what?
Love kimchi.
Oh, kimchi. Yes. My husband has learned how to wrap the kimchi in the fridge.
Okay.
Wow. I wish we had more time with you. I hate that.
I have like 50 other questions for you.
I know, me too. But thank you so much for, again, having us visit and your hospitality. We're so grateful to your staff and team. We met a bunch of great people at the Stars and Stripes newspaper. We have a lot of respect for the paper. Again, our dad read it. We read it, you know, he always had it there at the house, always. And to this day, he still gets the Stars and Stripes. So thanks for all you do around the world.
Well, thank you for asking me, and thank you for what you guys are doing. It's really important to have a voice out there. And I'll just give you a little funny story about stripes when I was still on active duty. So I was at Desert Storm, and I was a Yankees fan, and part of the time we were there was during the summer. And I liked to follow the Agate because, you know, there was no internet, there was no cell phones, you know, this is all we had. And the papers would come, but we were way, way, way forward. You know, we were up doing the oil fields and doing refugee missions, and the paper wouldn't always come consecutively. Well, we wouldn't read it out of order. We'd wait for the right paper to come in the right order, because if you read it out of order, then it's like, he had 12 homers that day, but now he's only got 10. That doesn't make sense. You know? Other people, it was with Ann and Abby or the comics. The comics in particular, you got to read it in order. So everybody's like, what day do you have? You know, I'm shifting it around. It was an interesting part of it.
Are you, do you see yourself staying at the Stars and Stripes for a long time? Is this going to... Is this your...
I've been there a while, but I'm probably not far from sunsetting and going on to something else. But I've been there since 92, so it's been quite a run. It's probably time for somebody else to come in and meet to do something else for a while. I probably have another year or two more.
Well, you've done a great job.
Well, I just want to reiterate what Lisa said, and thank you very much for your hospitality for the tour of the Stars and Stripes office. That was amazing. Shout out to Corey.
Hi, Corey.
So amazing.
Corey and Scott. Corey and Scott.
Yes, Corey and Scott. Yes, for sure. Mm-hmm. And everybody we met there, it was just...
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
And you know what? We met your social media team member, and she has been liking our stuff. And I just tell her I really appreciate her, too. And is there anything you'd like to plug or share with the audience before we say see you later?
So, you know, what I would share is that one of the unique things about Stars and Stripes is it doesn't have an opinion. It's not left or right, and it gives you real good, credible information. But if you see us with something wrong or you see us enter a tone, call us on it, because we don't always know when we don't get it quite right, and we need to be told so that we can do it better, because we're your voice. We tell the military community's story. We're not telling our story. We're telling your story, and we want that story to be accurate.
Yeah. Wonderful. Thank you.
And just real briefly, I know we're running out of time, but
I know I don't want to say bye either.
We got wind that you are involved in a nonprofit dog rescue. And could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, my wife and I run a rescue called Puppy Paws. We started it in 2015, so it's 10 years now. During that time, we have placed just about 5,000 dogs in homes. We have a network of fosters that help us, but we also take a lot in. And I'll tell you one funny story. We were 1 or 2 years into this, and I travel a fair amount, and I'll go to Japan, or I'll go to Germany, or I'll go to the Middle East, and I'll be gone for a week. And I'll leave the house, and we have three of our own dogs, and I'll leave the house, and, you know, we might have one foster or two foster, and that's still, five dogs is a lot. But unbeknownst to me, when I would get on the airplane, my wife was taking in a whole bunch of dogs. But they would be gone before I came back. And so this went on for a while, and I didn't know. But one time I came, and she failed. And there were 21 dogs.
Oh my God.
21 dogs. They were in the guest bathroom, in the tub. They were in the basement. They were.
I love it.
I was like, oh, my God.
I love your wife. Oh, my gosh.
She thought I was going to freak out and lose it. I kind of lived through it. But I served up my own pain, because now it's all out in the open. So now she just does it and she doesn't care.
You know, Rose and I are big animal advocates. We love animals. And part of our hats off, we like to work with the canine programs with veterans. If there's anything we can do to help you with Puppy Paws. Do y'all have an Instagram for Puppy Paws?
No, we have a website.
A website?
Yeah, I think it's just Puppy Paws Rescue.
Okay.
.org. No, .com, sorry. And you can just go there. You can Google it and find it. We're mainly in the East Coast area. So we'll take dogs from where they're supplied, North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia, move them up 95 to Maryland, Delaware, Pennsylvania, to where there's demand. So we're just moving supply to demand as it goes along. So the thing we've also transitioned to lately is we're doing some therapy dogs. I have a big Great Dane Lab Mix therapy dog right now. He's three. He's pure black. We call him Onyx. He's 90 pounds.
Nice.
And we take him to hospitals, mainly to the mental wards and other people in intensive care who need the most comfort and so on. We also take him to assisted living facilities. And it's just another outreach thing that we do to give back to people.
Well, I think I know what you're going to do after you retire. I think you've just said it. You're going to have an animal sanctuary.
Yes.
Wow. Max, well, you're pretty incredible. This was an incredible interview.
Yes, it was. And we so appreciate your time. You want to explain to them how we do this at the end?
Yeah. So as military brats, we never say goodbye. We always say, see you later. So see you later.
See you later.
See you later. Wow. Not only is he a military brat, he's a veteran. And his wife and him started a nonprofit and they take care of dogs. And he's Superman.
Oh my gosh, Lisa, I was totally blown away.
Yeah.
Like, I think I could have talked to Max. I probably could have talked to him another hour.
Yeah.
Like, there's just so many questions. I'm looking at my notes. There are so many questions that I have that I didn't even get to ask just because it was just so fascinating. Like, time and just like everything was just so fascinating.
And you guys, this might be one of our longest episodes, but come on. We had our mom on here and we have Max Letter from the Stars and Stripes newspaper. So, and hey, we need to hear from you guys. Give the Punk Brats a call. Our phone number is 512-254-5989. Find us on all social media, under Punk Brats or Punk Brats USA on Instagram. And yeah, Rose and I want to hear from all of our, you know, our fellow brats out there. And as soon as we're done with this episode, you know, always listen for that phone call. And because we get some fascinating stories and questions, don't we? So, yeah.
And like that last, if you don't have a question, you can call in with a comment as well. Like that last from Ellie, you know, just called in just to say that she loved traveling with her mother.
Yeah, she's adorable.
That was really sweet.
Yeah. And hey, visit us on our website, www.punkbrats.com. And here's the part that's no fun, but hey, we appreciate our audience out there for supporting us, listening to us. I love doing this with my sister. My mom was on, our mom was on here. Oh my gosh, it's getting better and better, Rose.
Yep.
Let's take us out on that note.
I'll see you later.
I'll see you later.
Hi, my name is Grace and I'm calling from Rota, Spain. Since you both lived overseas, I assume it was challenging to attend college tours. How did you both decide where to go to college? Thanks so much. Bye.